Hello and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. Hope everybody's having a fantastic Friday. How are you doing today, Deb?
Austin, I'm doing great. I want to thank everybody for the plethora of emails that we received after yesterday's show in support of Chuck Baldwin. I got myself kind of worked up on yesterday's show. If you missed it, you might want to listen to that one. It was kind of one of those heated ones I had. So I try not to do that very often because I am 61 years old. And I did go take some HGH stimulate immediately after I got off the air to bring my blood pressure down. Because my blood pressure is normally around 120 over 65. It's really good, 115 over 65. And so I felt it was up a little bit yesterday because I got myself kind of upset because of the censorship. I mean, we should call it censored news with views now. And I want everybody to continue to hammer news with views with letters and emails and continue to make sure that people know all over the world that it's not okay to censor a true patriot like Chuck Baldwin. Look, we all may not agree with each other, and that's okay. We're not supposed to. We're all individuals, and we all have freedom of speech, and we all have freedom of thought. And that's what we need to be aware of. But, you know, when people are like Chuck Baldwin, they've gone out and they've done what they've done. I mean, he was a vice presidential candidate for the United States a few years ago. I mean, are you there, Austin? Austin, you there? Am I still on, Todd? Well, I'm going to keep on talking like I'm on, but I heard a beep beep, so I'm going to make sure I'm on. So we ended up basically realizing that we have to take care of each other and supporting each other and realize that if we don't do that, what's going to end up happening is we're going to be in a situation where none of us are going to be able to say anything about anyone as far as any kind of truth. So we have to understand that this is what we have to do from a Christian standpoint, from a patriot standpoint. And we need to also realize too, you know, Chuck Baldwin's a good man. And what I did is I actually went to his website yesterday and ordered a bunch of books and tapes and CDs from him to let him know that we were supporting him not only, you know, verbally and on the show, but we're going to support him financially because it's probably going to take, give him a pretty big hit because News with Views has a pretty big reach and he'll be losing a lot of readers. So hopefully other people will pick him up and it'll work out okay for him. First story for the day. Kindergartner suspended over playing with pretend stick gun. This is out of North Carolina. They found that 5-year-old Caitlin Miller guilty of violating school policy 4331 and sentenced the imaginative youngster to a 1-day suspension. Her crime, playing king and queen with her friends at recess and using a stick as a make-believe gun to defend the royal couple against pretend invaders. Unbelievable. WTVD reports that Miller's mother, Brandy, told the news site she received a call from the officials at McLaughlin Elementary School on Friday to inform her about the punishment, which Miller served on Monday. This is, gosh, the 5-year-old gets suspended for playing with a stick gun. The assistant principal told me Caitlin had a stick, and she was using it to shoot other students. Brandy Miller told Fox News. 1 minute she's playing with her friends, the next her teachers are dragging her to the principal's office, told WTVD. She's confused. Nobody explained anything to her. District officials issued a statement defending the suspension. Of course they did. Hope County schools will not tolerate assaults, gosh, by a 5-year-old with a stick, threats or harassment from any student. District officials wrote in a prepared statement, any student engaging in such behavior will be removed from the classroom or school environment for as long as is necessary to provide a safe and orderly environment for learning. You know, when I was a kid, my gosh, we used to beat each other with building blocks in kindergarten. I mean, I remember those crazy days. Not real well because I was only 4 years old because I was put into kindergarten when I was 4, first grade when I was 5. And it's a time in your life when you're really developing a lot of new brain connections and your brain's really developing wiring of, you know, millions of connections per second, you know, when, especially when you're active and awake and you're actually doing things and interacting with your brothers and your sisters and your friends and your cousins and your other students. And for a 5-year-old to be taught that this is a police state and dragged to the office over pretending with a stick gun at the age of 5 is extremely egregious to me and makes absolutely no sense at all that this type of behavior would be allowed from these school officials. This is, again, the police state completely run amok. The police state doing whatever it wants to do, whenever it wants to do, however it wants to do it, without any thought or concern of what it's doing towards the children long-term-wise as far as their developmental progress or the other children who are involved in any of this. In fact, seeing this child being dragged off to the principal's office for using a stick gun. You know,
I'm back, bud.
I'm glad, Austin. I was hoping you were coming back.
Well, I had a bad signal. We had to reconnect and get it booted back up. I couldn't hear anything.
Oh, that's okay. What do you think about the girl being suspended for having a stick gun for a day in school and being dragged to the principal's office? Did you hear any of that?
I did. I saw that article earlier, actually right before the show. I mean, it's gotten out of line. I mean, we've seen kids getting suspended for turning their Pop-Tarts into the shape of a gun, for making the finger and thumb pistol signal like you do, you know, you play at Cops and Robbers or something like that, with the index finger and the thumb. This is what they're trying to do. They've been doing this for years now, is they want to demonize all firearms because, see, they know this generation, my generation, even some of the millennial generation are very, very active in firearm training. Your generation and older love firearms. Everybody's grown up with guns. Nobody's really scared of them as far as true patriotic Americans. Of course, you always have the liberals, but I exclude them in this conversation. So what they're doing is they've been taking this younger generation, pretty much, you know, middle school to elementary over the last 5 to 6 years, and they've absolutely demonized anything that could be made to look like a gun, that sounds like a gun, that walks, talks, quacks like a gun, so to speak. So that way, when this generation, another 10 to 15 years, starts going forward and they start voting and they start active in political areas, they're going to be already conditioned to be extremely scared of, and they're going to demonize firearms for no reason whatsoever, simply because they've been essentially beat into submission and to thinking that firearms are inherently bad for no reason whatsoever. And that way, then the UN can come in, the globalists can come in, and they can completely start banning firearms, and the populace, the younger populace that's voting, that's coming up, will actually embrace it and say, yes, we want guns banned. Just like Australia, just like in a lot of places in Europe, all these places, we need to ban firearms altogether. You shouldn't even be able to own one unless you want to own, like, an over and under shotgun for skeet purposes, which, I mean, that's obviously a completely useless firearm for any type of active firefight engagements. So this is what they're doing now. So I'm not surprised it's happened, but it's getting much, much more aggressive now. Making a stick and using it in the direction and shape of a firearm is now constituting suspension for a day. I found that pretty embarrassing, Dad, that we're actually doing this in America now.
I remember last year, I believe it was a Florida State player, actually made a finger point at a gun because he had tackled somebody or whatever, good play, we're going to get you. And he was suspended, thrown out, done, gone,
yep.
Kicked out of the camp. You remember that? And this is a college level sport. I mean, you know, and the news director goes, well, yes, he deserved to be kicked out over that. I'm like, oh, whatever, man. You guys get a life. Oh, by the way, Santa Claus is to appear as a gay black man now in new children's books. Washington Times, Harper Design said the picture book, Santa's Husband, God, I'm sick of those, will go on sale October the 10th, just in time for Christmas. The Time reported on Tuesday. The book will tell the true story of the black Santa and his white husband, who often fills in for him at the malls. According to the preview shared with Twitter this week by his author, Daniel Kibblesmith, he's a staff writer for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, which that doesn't surprise me, originally touched on the book's concept in a December 6th tweet in which he joked his future children will not only know about the black Santa, if they see a white one, they'll say, well, that's the husband. And he tweeted at the time, Santa's Husband was initially pitched as a humorous parody children's book, but the final product will be meant for all ages, Time reported. You know, I don't care if these guys are queer. I really don't care. I don't care. I don't care. That's their choice. It's like me saying, if somebody's not Christian, it's going to make me mad, or if somebody's a Muslim, it's going to make me mad. If that's what they choose to be, that's entirely up to them. I mean, if they want to be whatever. It's just, you know, you got to think about what you're doing. And if you're trying to force or indoctrinate another group of people or children into your way of belief or thinking. Number one, I don't teach my children about Santa Claus, newsflash. It's a lie. You know, if you want to talk about Kris Kringle, if you want to talk about the original person for who all this is based on in the, you know, from Germany, the old saint way back
Saint
when.
Nick.
Saint Nicholas or whatever his name was. That's one thing. But don't be going out and telling your children that you got a fat boy that slides down a chimney every year and brings you a bunch of presents and wonder why they don't believe you when you tell them something else. So don't do that. You know, just tell them it's about the birth of Jesus. It's about, you know, Jesus being born as a man through the Virgin Mary. Just tell them how God sent his son and make Christmas about Christmas, not about Santa Claus and getting a bunch of gifts. It's a huge marketing thing that was done years ago
by some of the New York stores, of course, who are primarily Jewish, who don't want to promote anything about Christianity during Christmas. In fact, if you go to the Macy's store in New York, if it's still in business, because I know they're having some issues with Macy's, I'm sure that one probably is. You know, when you go to their windows, which are known all over the world for their holiday seasons, and Austin, you've been up there with me before for this, they have nothing about Christ in those Christmas windows. It's like celebrating the seasons, but there's nothing about the virgin birth or manger scene or anything else, and because they don't want to have that there, because it's primarily a Jewish city. And so it's just part of what it is. And so you got to realize, guys, this is what New York City is. And, you know, it's just primarily Jewish. And, you know, and so it's very atheistic. It's very agnostic. It's very Jewish. It's very anti-Christian. The only time you'll ever see any real Christmas decorations are at Rockefeller Plaza and actually at the Trump's Towers. And that's about it. As far as any type of nativity scenes or Christmas trees symbolizing or trying to talk about the birth of Jesus. What do you think about the Santa Claus thing, Oz?
It's pretty embarrassing, man. I mean, it shows you, though, as far as how far they're trying to push this agenda. I mean, not only is it an interracial gay couple, I mean, you can't get any more confusing on the Santa Claus story than that. But of course, I'm not gonna teach Hunter as far as anything to do with Santa Claus. I've never agreed with it. You didn't teach me that. I grew up just fine realizing that my parents bought me things for Christmas. I've never really understood that concept either, to be honest with you, growing up. Why do you want to make your kids think that a big overweight individual comes down the chimney and gives you presents when you're the one that bought all the presents for your kids? I don't really understand that concept. I never have. Like, why do you want to give all the credit to somebody that doesn't even exist? They're completely made up and act like they're the ones that brought the presents when you're the one that had to pay taxes on the income that you made in order to go buy the presents and wrap them and get them together and save up bonuses and everything else, whatever you had to do to get your kids presents for Christmas, and then you give all of it over to a fake Santa Claus by saying he's the ones that brought the presents. Really made no sense to me whatsoever why people still do that. Another story too now on the need and the benefits of sleep. We talk about so much of you need sleep, and the issue now that we're running into, as we've said this before, is the Wi-Fi, the blue light, all the signals now that are completely keeping everybody awake. This is one of the reasons why we developed the really, really bioavailable melatonin sublingual years ago, because we wanted to have something that worked quickly, effectively, and throughout the night. One of the primary issues that you run into with a lot of these Wi-Fi signals that we're being bathed in all night, as Dad has explained this before, is the pineal gland that releases melatonin. It sees Wi-Fi frequency as actual waves of light. You may not physically see them with your eyes, but the pineal gland does, making it think that you're still awake, you're still in light, you're still in sun, so you don't need to release any melatonin. Dr. Sarah Gottfried just did another article on it. She says that a lack of restful sleep is the next sugar, as it is a health time bomb. She goes on to say technology has a large role to play in our society's sleep-deprived state. Artificial lights, LEDs, fluorescent light bulbs, blue lights from computer screens, television screens, nightlight devices, and iPhones, all from modern living, have stolen part of our sleep, she said. The sleep cycle is known as the circadian rhythm, and it plays an amazing role maintaining our health. This process regulates cell regeneration, brainwave activity, hormone production, and the regulation of glucose and insulin levels. She said before society became so modern, people went to bed at sunset and usually woke up a little bit before or at sunrise. That was pretty much the way it's always been. Now everybody stays up till 2, 3, 4 in the morning on their laptops, on their iPhones. They eventually black out from exhaustion. Then they end up waking up at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. The entire sleep schedules are completely out of whack. And again, this causes a lot of long-term health issues when you don't get adequate rest and you're not able to regenerate those cells and really let the body heal overnight. Anything you want to add on that, Dad? I know we've touched base on this before, but I really wanted to kind of bring it up again to encourage people to turn off your Wi-Fi routers, to put your cell phones in the other room, to decrease a lot of this exposure. Also, too, they say do not use your iPhone or look at your screen for at least 15 minutes before you lay down to go to bed. When you look at the real bright blue light, which I turn mine all the way down on my phone anyways, but when you look at it, it actually massively stimulates the back of the retina and it causes your body to think you're in full-blown sunlight mode. So when you look at your phone right before you go to bed and then you lay down, a lot of times they're doing studies now that show it make it very, very difficult to fall asleep in any normal period of time because your body actually goes into full-blown sunlight mode and thinks you need to be awake, Dad.
Well, that's an excellent explanation, Austin, but just make sure you turn your routers off at night, covering any lighting up in your room. Use black tape if you have to. Make sure your TVs are all turned off. Make sure your cable boxes are turned off or away from the bed. Make sure they're closed up so you don't have light coming in from that. You need to be in pitch black. You know, you need to be actually what we need to be doing. If I ever had to build another house again, which someday hopefully I will, I would actually build the bedroom as a Faraday cage. You say, what is that? I would actually line it with copper mesh behind the sheetrock. And I would actually have the ceiling and the walls all lined in copper mesh so it would stop all intrusion of Wi-Fi into the house, period. I would want to sleep basically in a box, in a steel box or a Wi-Fi mesh box. It's called a Faraday cage. You can look it up online. And that would give you really, really good sleep because all of this electromagnetic frequency we're getting from the power lines coming into the house, the plugs behind the bed, you know, the clock radios, all of this stuff are just bad. And also make sure you don't sleep with your iPhone under your pillow turned on. I have no idea why people do that because remember, that thing's a microwave oven. It's putting out a signal constantly. So you're microwaving your head while you're sleeping, which that just doesn't even sound good. Also, make sure it gets turned completely off when you go to sleep. If you need an alarm clock, buy an alarm clock. I mean, you know, that's okay. You can get a little wind-up alarm clock that doesn't even make any noise now. And just turn it on when you need to get up in the morning and don't worry about having your cell phone wake you. Don't have your cell phone by your bed so you can stare at it if you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and bathe your retina in blue light and really get awake like walking out in bright sunlight. Don't be doing all that kind of stuff. And also, over the age of 40, you can start taking the sublingual melatonin. Even if you're younger than that and if you're jet lagged or you're doing another timeline or you had to get up not light time or you had to get up in the middle of the night or a night shift, you could take the melatonin and knock yourself out. Because I take it every night. I'm 61 and I take the melatonin. I have been taking it probably over 10 years and it really helps me to sleep. Now, melatonin is funny. Here's what happens. If I take one melatonin, which is 3 milligrams sublingual, I chew it up under my tongue and I don't swallow it. I let it dissolve. It works a lot faster that way than just letting it sit there for 20 minutes trying to dissolve. And what it does, it allows your body to kind of go to sleep and then your own pineal gland will kick in and start continuing the release of melatonin. Now with me personally, if I take 2 melatonins, which is 6 milligrams of melatonin before I go to bed at night, what happens is it tells my pineal gland not to produce anything. It downregulates it. And when that happens, I wake up about 2 o'clock in the morning wide awake. I mean, even with, you know, 2 melatonin in me. So my ideal amount of melatonin that I use is 3 milligrams every single night. It works great. Now, if you take more than 2, you can if you get older, but then you start having weird dreams at night. I mean, you start getting around 6-9 milligrams of melatonin at night, you can start having some really weird dreams. I mean, some sicko weirdo dreams, stuff that you don't want to think about or dream about. And I've had that happen to me before. In fact, I have a neighbor, and I'm not going to mention any names. They had a father-in-law who was living with them, who was in his 90s, and he was taking melatonin at night, and just I must have taken a large dose. Woke up, thought his dream was real. Went outside just a few months ago when it was real cold one night, fell. And they found him the following morning and his core temperature dropped down like 86 degrees. I mean, he was basically hypothermic, extremely hypothermic. And at that age, your body can't snap back from that. He passed away. May he rest in peace, because melatonin can do that to you because it makes you really think things are real, especially if you're older and you may have a touch of senile dementia. Now, whether this person had that or not, I don't know. He seemed pretty lucid to me every time I spoke to him. But the reality is, it's a sad story, but you just got to be careful with this stuff. I mean, melatonin is a hormone. It's produced by the pineal gland. But remember, guys, when you drink fluoride, you calcify the pineal gland. When you calcify that pineal gland, it really reduces the ability of the pineal gland to release melatonin. So it messes up the circadian rhythm and it messes up the sleep cycle and it makes you age really, really fast. That's another reason not to use fluoride. Fluoride is just one of those poisons you need to stay away from. By the way, I just got a really good article in from Christensen and it's called Death Valley Snowballs and Fiat Currencies. Now, if any of you have ever been to Death Valley, Austin and I drove through there a few years ago. I think it was 120 degrees. It was crazy how hot it was in that place. You know, so snowballs don't have a very, you know, long life expectancy in Death Valley. But fiat currencies backed by credit and debt survive longer than snowballs. But history shows all of these fiat currencies are inflated into worthlessness and eventually die. U.S. dollars have value only to the extent that they are strictly limited in supply, and they are backed by something like petrodollars or oil or coal or whatever, or gold. Ben Bernanke on November 21st, 2002, basically massively increased the amount of dollars. We know that the soft fiat dollars has grown rapidly since 1971, and especially after the 2008 crisis while Bernanke was still chairman of the Fed. The U.S. government is officially now $20 trillion in debt. However, unfunded liabilities are in the hundreds of trillions, and, of course, the total amount of dollar debt in dollar denominations in the quadrillions. The official national debt has doubled every 8 to 9 years for decades. Debt in 2017 is $20 trillion and accelerating higher. And in 24 to 27 years, it could be $160 trillion. And we're wondering how long this fiat currency Ponzi scheme can survive. If the Fed prints another $140 trillion, will that destroy the purchasing power of the dollar? If it's not linked to the reserve currency as far as with gold any longer, it probably will. This says, note to Congress, if you don't raise the debt limit, you'll collapse the fiat currency bubble. But if you raise the limit and continue the ever-increasing debt, you'll only delay a larger collapse. Well, there's a little bit more to this than this article is actually talking about, because this is a good article, but I want to share this part with you. The problem is that the interest is never printed. In other words, you never have interest being printed when the debt is being made. If a bank, and this is going to sound really weird to you guys, they have like a 40-to-1 reserve ratio requirement now. If the bank brings in $1 million in deposits, they can loan out $40 million on that $1 million in reserves. They just literally make the money with just adding it to their computer screens. It's the nuttiest thing you've ever seen. The way they can do that is they figure that no one's going to come withdraw the $1 million, and so no one's going to come at the same time, so they're allowed to use a 40-to-1 ratio as far as how much of that currency they have to maintain in this reserve. So this is something they used to do with gold. This is all Babylonian money magic that was started by the Rothschilds. And so now they're doing it with the currency. Well, the problem is that means there's 40 times as much currency in circulation, 40 times as much debt in circulation as their currency being printed. Well, it's actually much higher than that, because then they can take derivatives and do another 100 times that. So there may be $40,000, $50,000, $100,000 in circulation with computer dots and digits for every $1. I don't know what the real number is. They're not really telling us what the real number is. But the craziest thing about all of this stuff is that, you know, this can't go on. This is why they want to do a world reserve. This is why they want to do a one world currency and make it all cashless. Because once they do the cashless currency, they don't have to worry about how much debt or how much they have available to them, because it doesn't make any difference. They can just continue to add things on computer screens. And if they want to deflate the currency by taking 8 zeros or 9 zeros off of it, they can just do it automatically with everybody. And everybody gets the equal amount of money loss or money reduction or currency devaluation, whatever you want to call it. So it's going to be interesting when we watch this new world order come in with this one world currency, Austin, because quite frankly, after we've done this show on Wednesday with Pastor Baldwin, with the CFR members that are involved with the Clinton administration, and that was a Freudian slip, with the Trump administration, it's going to be interesting to see if Trump's actually able to do anything as far as started trying to stabilize the debt. I think about this too, guys. If you've got a huge debt and you owe it to the Fed and you owe it to these other countries, you start paying the Fed the debt back, you take the money out of circulation. When that happens, you, at that point, decrease the M1 money supply, which means the money gets real, real tight. This is what happened with Nixon. This is why he said he was now a Keynesian. This is what happened with Bill Clinton. He started balancing the budget. It always happens when you balance the budget, the debt gets worse because the payments can't be paid because the money in circulation is reduced. It's a Ponzi scheme. It can't be fixed. It has to be stopped. That's all we can do, is to basically take this entire Ponzi scheme that these guys have done with this Babylonian money magic, nationalize the entire Federal Reserve system, take the money back that they've stolen from us with this illegal scheme they've had, and allow the country to go back to real currency based on gold or oil or coal or natural products or whatever. It doesn't make a difference what you base it on, but you have to have it based on, so it has to be based or backed by something. What do you think, Oz?
No, you're absolutely right. That's why it's always, usually any time currency has been backed by a precious metal and it's remained pure as far as the actual backing on it, it's always remained for a pretty good significant period of time a good solid backed currency. The problem is what we've done is, like you just said, when we took that away, and now what we have, what's called irredeemable paper currency, you cannot redeem it for anything. You guys remember when JFK had the $5 bills printed off, and you could, it actually said in them, payable to the bearer on demand in $5 in silver. Set it on the bill, on the Federal Reserve note, which means, yeah, you could go to the bank, you could go into the bank, hand them a $5 bill, and they would give you $5 worth of silver, whatever that was at that specific time. I'm not 100% sure, but that's exactly what you could do. You could do that with as much cash as you really wanted to do. Now it's nothing. It's irredeemable. You cannot redeem it for anything. It is literally paper. It costs, I think, on average 12 cents a bill for a $100 bill right now. 12 cents to manufacture a $100 bill. There's nothing backing it. There's nothing holding it. So as soon as this whole Ponzi scheme starts to collapse, which is the whole point of what they wanted to do in making it irredeemable paper currency, so they could switch us over and transition us to the digital global currency, because you guys have to remember, once it goes digital and once it goes global, there will be no living with the globalists anymore, so to speak. There will be no living with them at all, because they can completely manipulate the dollar at will. They can already do it now with the paper, but eventually something has to get printed. They have to actually show paper getting printed at some point in time. When it goes digital, there's none of that anymore. They literally add dashes, digits, zeros, commas, whatever they want to add, whenever they want to add them, however they want to add them, and there's no accountability at all. Remember, we already tried to audit the Fed. As soon as they audited, they found multiple trillions of dollars that were completely just not matching up on the balance sheets, and all of a sudden the Fed slammed the book shut and said, oh, we're not going to allow you to audit us anymore, sorry about that, goodbye, and walked out. That's how uncontrolled these guys are, and they're doing it when they still actually have to print money. They're still this out of control. Think about what's going to happen if it goes totally digital and there is literally no accountability whatsoever, and it's on a global system where they can get the entire world under a global digital currency. They will literally be able to control, manipulate, collapse, boost, blow up whatever single country they want, whenever they want to do it, however they want to do it, and nobody will be able to stop them at all. That's why I've been such an advocate of stopping, A, the digital currency that's starting to spread everywhere. I told you guys Wells Fargo now has completely allowed cardless ATM machines to start now. You don't even have to have your card to pull money out of the ATM. By the end of the year, they said they're going to have, where you're not even going to have to use a PIN number, you're going to be able to pull up your phone, swipe your phone on the ATM, and it's going to give you cash. That's where it's already going. That's why I tell people all the time, you always need to have some gold and silver reserves stored up. Wherever you want to store them in a safe area, that's completely up to you. You know better than I do, but you need to have some physical metal set aside when this collapse comes, because it's not a if anymore, guys. It is a when it collapses. And having a whole pile of cash at the beginning, you'll still be able to utilize it. For a short while, you'll still be able to purchase goods for a short time. But once everybody realizes that you can't barter anything with paper because it's useless, it's irredeemable, everything starts switching over to metals, and then at that point, it starts switching over to food and ammunition as well, because then it becomes survivable barter materials. And no matter what, you still can't eat silver and gold, you can't hunt with ammunition, and you can always eat food. So that's why I always tell people, guns, food, silver, gold, those are the ones you need to really stock up on and have a storehouse of. That's why we have the food buckets that we sell all the time here. We have friends come in the office. I had another guy come in the other day and buy a bucket off of us just to have it as a backup, guys. It's 20-year shelf life food. If you don't eat it, you don't eat it. If you do eat it for something, you do eat it. But it's always there as a backup, and you know no matter what, you have some stored up food in the closet somewhere instead of dealing with the 2 to 3 day supermarket sweep, which is how most people live. Majority of people do not have more than 72 hours of full meals in their house at any given time. That's a bad place to be, guys. But yet they'll go out and they'll buy an 80-inch flat screen for $4,000 or $5,000, but they don't even have more than 3 days of food in their pantry. I've seen it. I can't stand it. Drives me nuts. That's why I tell everybody, make sure you have the essentials and necessities, because once this whole deck of cards comes down, everybody that's standing there that thought it was never going to happen is all going to be begging all the people that did think it was going to happen, and I don't want to be in the position of being a beggar in that situation. That's not a good place to be when that happens.
Well, I know that a lot of people buy the stuff on time, like with the flat screens, they'll finance it. And a lot of these companies that sell these, you know, will give it to you for 18-20% interest. You know, you pay $50 a month or $100 a month or whatever it is, for, like, for years, and you pay the flat screen off. And that's why a lot of people do that. You know, food buckets, you know, over $100. And so, you know, they don't have the $100 to spend because they'd rather spend the money on the payments every month on the flat screen. I've got a friend of mine that sells cars, and he says, Ted, people don't buy cars to pay cash for cars. They're too expensive now. They're like houses. He says, what they do is they buy, what is my payment going to be? The response is always, I don't care what the car costs. I just need to know what my payment is. Because that way, if they can afford $200 or $300 or $400 or $500 a month for a car payment, that's what they spend. And they buy up to their limit of what they can afford to pay. The problem is if they buy the wrong cars, then they're immediately upside down in those vehicles as soon as they drive off the lot. And it may take the entire length of that loan to get back into a position where you have equity in that vehicle. And that's one of the reasons that the Hondas have done so well, and certain sports cars like Corvettes have done so well, and pickup trucks, especially the diesel trucks, have done so well, because you don't take that long to get your equity position back into the truck, where if you need to trade out of the truck to get something newer back under warranty again, you can. But I remember my mother-in-law years ago, she bought a Mitsubishi, she had a Honda, and she traded it on a Mitsubishi Eclipse. And when she made the deal, the Mitsubishi Eclipse had already... Now, I wasn't involved in this deal, so this is something that she did without asking me, and I don't really expect my mother-in-law to ask me what she does, but, you know, this has been 20 years ago. And she bought the Mitsubishi Eclipse, and she had equity in the Honda, and as soon as she drove the Mitsubishi Eclipse off the lot, she was $8,000 upside down on the vehicle, which means she's going to have to make payments until she paid $8,000. Then that car broke down with her three times, left her stranded, had to be towed in three times in 1 year, so she traded that in on a used Explorer. Before it was over with, she was $15,000 upside down on the Explorer. So it was a big mess. So guys, that's what happens with these car loans. Right now there's literally hundreds of billions of people who are upside down in car loans right now in the United States, and if something happens and they had to get rid of that car, they simply would not have the money to get out of that car because their payments would escalate so high because they'd have to roll the debt into the next vehicle. So that's not a position you want to be in. So if you've got a car that runs well, it's still under warranty, or even if you have, even if it's not under warranty, if it's a Toyota or a Honda or something that's really, really reliable, just stay with it. I mean, just get that thing paid off and just keep, you know, take that extra money you're making, you know, that you're not making on car payments every month, and just put it on the house mortgage. Pay it as an extra principal, or buy a food bucket. There you go. Or buy some storable food, or go to Health Masters and get some vitamins or supplements, and, you know, store up a few months supply on those. Do something else with the money instead of just keeping it on the car. And I always remember this, and I heard a pastor tell me this one time, and I listened to him, and he said, don't buy things you don't need with money you don't have to impress people you don't know. That's a very good advice, by the way, because it really helps people to stay a lot healthier in a lot of different areas of their life. And that's why when I did my tape series, I have a CD series out. It's still available. It's like $100. It's great. It's great value. It's called Maximum Success, How to Live Disease-Free, Debt-Free, and Worry-Free. And we talk about the principles of money. We talk about the Babylonian debt system. We talk about not financing cars. If you've got a car that's paid for, keep it. Don't go into debt over an automobile if you've already got a decent car. Don't go into debt, you know, over toys. You know, if you're going to go buy a four-wheeler, go pay cash for it or don't buy it. If you're going to buy a boat, pay cash for it or don't buy it. If you're going to buy a boat, let me give you some advice. Buy a used boat. That's really important because those things fall off like a lead balloon. You're laughing at me, aren't you, Austin? But all of these things, all of these things basically have a very steep depreciation curve. And so if you get a boat 2 or 3 years old with low hours on it, it's usually just as good as a new one at about a quarter of the price. So just try to avoid buying things like that. Just because you have the latest, greatest thing on the market doesn't mean it's going to help you or benefit you if you have to finance all that crazy stuff. By the way, turmeric has now been found to outperform pneumococcal vaccines in protecting infants from pneumonia. Wow. Despite no evidence of its effectiveness to prevent disease, public health agencies and medical communities insist that infants and children between the ages of 2 and 12 months, which is stupid, require up to 4 shots of the pneumococcal conjugate vaccine. Now, new research finds that a substance in turmeric, curcurcurum, may outperform the vaccine in providing long-lasting protection against main potentially deadly lung damage in infants. Wow. The vaccine's side effects are vomiting, diarrhea, drowsiness, swelling, seizures, dermatitis, edema, acute toxicity, and death. The curcurcum, the tumor, the toxicity, side effects are none.
Yeah.
And it basically, pneumococcal bacteria, the most common cause of bacterial infections in children, and a frequent cause of infections in adults. Infection starts in the nose or throat, where it may persist for weeks or months. Pneumococcal infections are also the most common complication of seasonal flu. All right, I got to stop here on this article. Here's the thing. A two-month-old baby should be getting breastfed. And if the mother is taking the turmeric, taking D3, taking vitamin C, taking all of the nutrients that her body has to have in the milk that she's producing, that child's going to get all of the antibiotics, bodies, and all the and all the stuff that it needs to be incredibly healthy the first year of its life. Austin has a little boy that's fixing to experience to have his first birthday party here in a couple of weeks, and the kid's been incredibly healthy. I mean, he may get a runny nose for a day, maybe 2 days. That's it. That's the end of it. And he's not even upset about the runny nose. He doesn't know any better. He doesn't care. I mean, it just doesn't really affect him. Some days he doesn't even get a runny nose, and everybody else is sick. So the crazy thing about this is, guys, if the mother is taking the nutrients that she needs, if she's had proper prenatal nutrition and, you know, proper nutrition while she was pregnant, what ends up happening is the children are born with very, very healthy immune systems, which is something that globalists do not want. They don't want that because they don't want you living to a longer age and reproducing. Remember, the U.S. has the highest infant death rate of any industrialized nation. I'm going to repeat that. The highest infant death rate of any industrialized nation. And the leading cause of death in children, other than accidents in the United States, is cancer. I mean, this is a major, major problem. Now, autism is off the chain, and we're having all of these health problems with all of these kids, which means, guess what? They're not going to be a viable species or a viable biological specimen in order to reproduce. This is the goal of what they're all trying to do, is reduce the population of the planet. What do you think, Austin?
No, you're absolutely right. And I mean, speaking of cancer now, there's a group of cancer victims who are suing Monsanto in a California federal court. Environmental Protection Agency's Cancer Assessment Review Committee, who was ran by Jess Rowland, was the deputy director of that group. The group now that's suing the EPA and suing Monsanto has accused Rowland of actively hiding evidence of cancer-causing properties of glyphosate. And their accusations are not far-fetched at all. The judge presiding over the trial has referred to the relationship between Monsanto and Jess Rowland as highly suspicious. The plaintiff's attorney have introduced into evidence a letter written to Rowland in March 2013 by senior toxicologist Marion Copley. Copley worked in the EPA's Health Effects Division. Now, I talked about this briefly a couple weeks ago with what she wrote. Now the full letter has come out now on what she wrote, and she noted that glyphosate was originally created as a chelating agent, as we talked about. Chelators are chemicals or chemical compounds that react with heavy metals, altering their chemical structure and improving both their stability and ability to bond with other metals and substances. Copley went to write on the list multiple different mechanisms in glyphosate that cause cancer. She said the chelators in it are an endocrine disruptor. We already know that. She goes on to say there that the process that it causes in which our bodies to kill tumors stops. It also induces free radical formation. It also is a free radical scavenger enzyme requiring zinc and calcium for activity. It binds to zinc necessarily for the immune system function. It's also genotoxic, which is a key cancer mechanism. It also inhibits DNA repair, enzymes requiring metal cofactors. It also binds the calcium necessary for the immune response. It also damages the kidneys and pancreas as a mechanism for tumor formation. Its kidney pancreas damage can lead to clinical chemistry changes to favor tumor growth. Glyphosate also kills bacteria in the gut and the gastrointestinal system and 80% of the immune system. It also suppresses the immune system, making the body susceptible to tumors. She then notes, guys, that after all that stuff I just said, that while any one of the things I just mentioned could in fact cause tumors or cancer, glyphosate causes all of these mechanisms simultaneously. She said it essentially is certain that glyphosate directly causes cancer. She went on to point out that Rowland's credentials were outdated and that the CARC's science was at least a decade behind where it should have been, and it showed directly that they were hiding information in order to make profitable gain. Now, I wanted to give you guys a heads up on this because we talk about it all the time. These are scientists that directly work with glyphosate that did studies showing this stuff causes cancer, guys. It does not get any more clear-cut evidence than this anymore, that this stuff is an incredibly toxic compound to the human body and actually any living mammal known to man, regardless, and plants, everything. So do the best you can, guys, to stay away from this stuff. Eat organic if you can. Eat non-GMO if you can. I know some stuff still gets contaminated with it, but when you go out and you're buying wheat that has just been hosed down with glyphosate 3 days before they harvest it, I promise you, you're going to have digestive issues. That's what I talked about yesterday on the show. Gluten can be a problem for some people. It's definitely not extremely healthy to eat bread all the time, but a huge issue we're seeing now with the Crohn's and the irritable bowel and all this stuff, in my opinion, is directly linking back to the massive amount of glyphosate in our diets, and one of those things is wheat, because it's sprayed down so heavy 3 days before it's harvested and doesn't even have a chance to be rinsed off by rain or anything. It sits right in there, it's harvested, gets processed, and lands right on your table for you to eat and put your digestive tract on top of the fact that gluten causes inflammation by itself. Put all that together and you got yourself one really, really toxic compound to put in your body, Dad.
No, it doesn't even make any sense why people continue to douse themselves with glyphosate. And if the Food and Drug Administration really cared about us, they would ban the use of this on crops that are about to be harvested. I mean, I don't even know what to say about this. I mean, you know, we keep talking about this stuff like it's going to make a difference, and we keep believing it's going to make a difference. But the only way we can make a difference, Austin, is if the people that are listening to our show and other shows stop buying the product. If you stop buying their filthy crops with all their glyphosate, they'll stop spraying it with glyphosate, because the demand that'll start to develop with crops with no glyphosate, and what'll end up happening is all these people start buying their product instead of the glyphosate product, and then all of a sudden the glyphosate product will say, we want part of that market share, we're losing our market share, and they'll stop spraying their crops. That's all you can do. By the way, Trump has ignited a Republican civil war. Chuck Baldwin talked about this on Wednesday. Go back and listen to that show if you'd like. This is an interesting article from the Daily Sheeple, and it's by Alice Salas. It says, President Donald Trump continues to use Twitter to prevent his frustrations about not passing of the Obamacare repeal. And on Thursday, which was yesterday, he used a social media platform to attack members of his own party. This is what Chuck Baldwin said he was doing on Wednesday, if you guys remember. He was urging Republicans to fight members of the House Freedom Caucus, a conservative congressional group consisting of members who lean more conservative than their peers. And the president added, these lawmakers will hurt the entire Republican agenda if they don't get on the team and fast. Trump tweeted, the Freedom Caucus will hurt the entire Trump the agenda. He also, and then Justin Amash, he basically responded. He said, it didn't take long for the swamp to drain. No shame, Mr. President. Almost everyone succumbs to the D.C. establishment. Whoa. In fact, this is what the Freedom Caucus said. A Republican conservative hit attacking for failing to keep his promise to drain the swamp. Representative Ted Yoho, Republican of Florida, also responded to the president, saying it was unfortunate that he had used the widely popular online platform to claim the most conservative Republicans in Washington were actually hurting the Republican agenda. Because we're not fighting the president, we're trying to honor what we ran on and our constituents have voted us in for, Yoho told MSNBC. Republican Massey out of Kentucky, who is not a member of the House Freedom Caucus, also took to Twitter to defy the commander-in-chief, saying Trump's decision to go after Republicans proved he had some quite uncomfortable in Washington's, that he had become quite uncomfortable in Washington, D.C. swamp. It's not a swamp. It's not a swamp. It's a swamp. Not a hot tub, he told the president. Wow. Wow. It's not a swamp. It's a swamp, not a hot tub. And so basically Trump is using a lot of political... See, the problem with Trump, and I'm just going to be honest with you guys, okay, he's a CEO. He's the owner of the Trump Enterprises or whatever, Trump Corporation, Trump Brands. He's not used to having to work with people to get things done. He just tells people to do stuff and they do it, or he fires them. He can't fire the Congress. He can't fire the Senate. He can't fire the judiciary. And so he has to work within a structured organization to not allow the executive office to run amok. And this is the problem he's running into. The entire judiciary is pretty much compromised in many areas now because of the Federalist Society. We've talked about that in detail. And the congressional leaders are compromised. And when you have a group of these people that are extremely conservative who want to have our country back on the House Freedom Caucus, what ends up happening is, you know, we end up in a situation where Trump fights them. Now, let me talk about the House Freedom Caucus for a second and who's in it. This is an article by Drew Silver. This is amid all coverage of House Republicans' unruly efforts to select a speaker who can command broader support from the fractious ranks. One name keeps coming up, the House Freedom Caucus. But what exactly is it? Pew Research Center has confirmed the identities of 36 Freedom Caucus members through representatives' public statements, their comments to the media or to their offices, direct responses. A handful of other House members who reportedly belong to the group could not be confirmed. The communications director for Representative Daryl Issa of California, for example, said he could neither confirm or deny his membership in the caucus. Ideologically speaking, they are among the most conservative House Republicans, though not at all at the right end of the most of the perspectrum. To quantify this, we use the data set called DW Nominate, first developed by political scientists Keith Poole and Howard Rosenthal. And basically what it's saying is that they're trying to figure out who these people are. The group, which includes many veterans of the Tea Party movement, was formed in January with the declared aim of pushing the House GOP leadership rightward on certain fiscal and social issues, kind of like with Ron Paul when he was back there. More broadly, the caucus wants power shifted away from leadership to the rank and file by, for instance, giving committees more leeway on which bills to move forward and allowing more amendments to come to floor votes. And so what we're doing here is we got a group of people who actually want to be part of this. Kurt Dawson from Florida is part of it. Ron DeLinkis from Florida is part of it. There's a whole list of these. If you go to this article, it's from the Pew Research Center. And what is the House Freedom Caucus and who's in it? And it tells you who these guys are. And apparently, Trump is trying to start a war with these guys because he's unwilling at this point to allow them to do what they're trying to do. It's kind of like the Tea Party conservatives that came to the White House. A lot of them were compromised, like Rubio. We called him Bubble Boy during the election. And we need to understand something, guys. You know it's true, Austin. He led a bunch of gay parties and a bunch of bubble baths. And so the whole thing about is that we've got to realize is that, you know, we've got to figure out something here, what we want from our country and what we want from our elected officials. And guys, I admire these guys for this. I admire them for wanting to drain the swamp and not turn the United States into this giant conglomerate corporation of special interest groups, basically looking at us as not shareholders, but as people who are customers buying things to serve them and make them money, like Chuck Baldwin talked about on Wednesday. What's your next story, Austin? What do you think about this?
Yeah, it is. That's exactly how they look at us. That's how all of them do. Either from the globalists look at us like we're slaves or we're customers. And so that's what we have going on now. And it's one of those things where it's frustrating because that was never how our Constitution was written, nor was that how America was supposed to be founded. But that's what they're wanting to do now is who can produce the most amount of money, and we're the consumer. That's why they love spying on us. That's why they've already passed with the Senate and all that, have already pushed through the bill I talked about yesterday, allowing Comcast and Verizon, all these internet companies, to sell all of your information, including your browsing history, your watch history, your timelines, everything, to third-party buyers without even giving you an option to rebut it. No consent needed whatsoever. They could just sell your information. I don't think Trump has signed that yet. I really, really hope he doesn't. But that goes to show you right there that they see us all as customers. Also, in other news, a new generation of artificial intelligence is now using facial recognition feed of users' features to detect emotional states during a major crisis scenario. Experts believe that this AI now understands when a person is upset. An immersive film project is attempting to understand how people react in stressful situations by using AI. Film and gaming technologies to place participants inside a simulated riot and then detecting their emotions in real time. Designs are an immersion social digital experiment. The objective is to get through a simulated riot alive. The video narrative is controlled by the emotional state of the user, which is monitored through AI software in real time. Currently, the pilot's interface can recognize three emotional states: fear, anger, and calmness. This is predictive behavior on steroids, real-time surveillance analysis of the population, and the programming of artificial stimuli to make people react. Now they know what makes them tick, and they know what type of event, real or manufactured, might make them react in a certain way. The AI is getting out of control, guys. This is getting further and further and further down the line to where these guys are going to be able to start predicting what you're going to do before you ever even start to do it. And before you even start to think it, they're going to figure it out. They went on to state in here, we have been doing research in emotion detection from facial expression, voice, body gesture, EEG, etc. for many years. We hope the project's success will make people see the benefits of AI leading to the development of smart homes, buildings, and cities. Guys, this all comes back to the UN Agenda 21, Agenda 2030 protocol. They want to start putting everybody in these giant smart cities, these giant smart apartments where, well, actually the apartment yourself you're going to live in is going to be quite small, but to these giant skyscrapers, they pack everybody in. They have cameras everywhere. They have microphones everywhere. They have surveillance everywhere. They listen to, they watch every single aspect of your life, and they can predict anything you're going to do. The only thing left, guys, at this point, once this starts being implemented, will be whether or not they want to provoke a crowd and a riot, or whether or not they want you to be calm and pacify the crowd. This is a serious issue because no matter what happens at this point, they can turn a crowd into a riot, or they can turn a riot into calmness, and they can figure out how to do it all with predictive programming. This has been going on for years, but now it's actually going mainstream where they're saying they actually want to start utilizing this stuff in real time on the general population, Dad. It's pretty crazy when you start doing this research on the AI, man.
Well, remember I told you the other day, I said, you know, the few more things you need to start doing research on, Austin, and you're doing it now. And once you start doing it, you're absolutely right. It goes down another whole rabbit hole. But it's about the drugs. It's about the sorcery. It's about controlling us. It's about the electrical energy they're putting into us. It's about the cell phones. It's about the Wi-Fi towers. It's about all of the stuff that we've talked about. You know, it's about the pharmaceuticals, which is basically the sorceries of Babylon, which we talk about in the Bible. Here's an article. I don't have a name on it, but it's pretty good. It says, most folks are casual about drug use because we've been told that the idea that legal drugs are for food, or for good, physically and harmless, spiritually, and that they can trust our lives to the professionals. What I'm going to present may be difficult to understand, but it's true. The word pharmacy and pharmaceutical are derived from the Greek word pharmakia, which is Strong's Exhaustive Concordance, is G5331. This word is found in the Bible in the following passage of Scripture. Remember, this is how they're using. Remember, they're putting us into these trances, guys. This is out of Galatians 5:19-21. Now the deeds of the flesh are evident, which are immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, which means pharmakia, okay, strife, jealousy, outbursts of anger, disputes. It also says in Revelation 18:23, and the light of a lamp will not shine in you, the great city of Babylon, any longer, and the voice of the bridegroom and bride will not be heard in you any longer, for you are merchants with the great men of earth, because all nations were deceived by your sorcery or pharmakia. That's why they're putting us all on drugs, all of these immunizations, pharmakia. The NIV says it this way, by your magic spell, all the nations were led astray. The ISV says, and all the nations were deceived by your witchcraft. The NET Bible says, because all the nations were deceived by your magic spells. The Doré-Ramis Bible says, for all nations have been deceived by thy enchantments. And finally it says, because your spell-inducing drugs, all the races were led astray, by the Heritage Bible. I mean, unbelievable. I mean, think about that for a second. All the races were led astray, and nearly everyone is being influenced by this sorcery. Even if you aren't taking prescription medication, over-the-counter or other drugs, you still ingest the drink, the GMOs, you bathe and drink and shower in the fluoride, you breathe the air with the chemtrails, and you're also influenced by this sorcery. Drug spells are not always the direct result of someone intentionally practicing witchcraft who casts a spell with a potion. Well, this doesn't happen, but sometimes it's because of the drugs and the chemicals we put into our body inadvertently. What does that impact on you personally and those around you? As a saint, what you should do about the situation is critical at the hour and the closing of this age. And it basically says this, is that these guys are going in here doing everything they possibly can to bring up as much demonic activity and get you on as many of these drugs and chemicals they possibly can to affect you and affect your consciousness and your ability to make choices and decisions for yourself. You know, I talked about that a lot yesterday. I said, what is it going to take to make everybody wake up and say, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to be involved in this anymore. I'm going to start talking to people at the grocery store who have children about immunizations. I'm going to do that. Now, sometimes the people just tell you it's none of your business. But if you're real nice to them and you talk to them, you tell them that they got a pretty child, so you got a pretty child, you know, what are you doing about, are you doing anything with the immunizations, or have you read the literature on, you know, both sides of the immunizations? And a lot of times if you just ask them questions like that, you'll find very quickly that they're awake or they're not awake. And if they aren't awake, you can always say to them, hey, look, why don't you do this? Instead of doing this and this and this, why don't you just go ahead and read some articles on this and make a decision? Or if you see a woman who's pregnant, that's the absolute best time to do it. Hey, what are you guys going to do when you find out when you have the baby? Are you going to immunize? What have you decided? And say, well, then they'll start saying, we don't know what to do. We've read about it. We've learned all about it. We thought we had to do it. Well, no, that's some options you have, but there's a lot of kids coming down with autism. Talk to them about prenatal nutrition. Just be a little bit, don't be pushy, but just be inquisitive and be nice to them. Because if we all start doing that, start waking up the masses, you know, it'll make a big difference. Guys, thank you so much for listening to us this week. It's been a fast week. I love you guys. I appreciate you so much. Thank you for listening to me yesterday, and let me kind of go off on a tangent there with Chuck Baldwin, who's a friend of mine, and I don't like my friends being messed with. I'm very funny about it. So God bless you. Thank you for supporting Health Masters. Thanks for getting your multiple vitamins from us. Thanks for just being here for us and praying for us. I appreciate you doing that. God bless you. Have a wonderful weekend. Austin, it's yours to close.
Got it, bud. Yes, guys, we definitely appreciate all the emails this week. Been a lot of wild topics coming up, so thanks for hanging in there with us. We should have another great show next week, as we always try and get a lot of good info for you guys. If you need anything, email us, call us, healthmasters.com. You can also call us on our 1-800 number, 1-800-726-1834. Check out our product of the week that's on sale right now, our sublingual B12. It's really, really good product. 5,000 micrograms of methylated methylcobalamin B12. Very, very good for energy. Very good for red blood cell count. Incredibly good product for overall health, immune system, brain functioning, heart health. It's B12. It's an essential B vitamin. Your body needs it. And most people are very, very deficient in it. And it's on sale right now for over 15% off. We also, too, have black seed oil capsules back in stock, so we have a full supply of black seed oil liquid and a full supply of black seed oil capsules. They are back on the website now. Whenever you guys want to order some, I know there was a huge demand for it, and so we have it rolling. Also, too, our new Immune Support DF is going to be back in stock next week. I've been holding off to make sure we're actually going to get it in. Everything's good to go. We're going to be getting it next week, so everybody's got back orders. We'll be getting it out to you. I'll give you guys more on that next week. So, guys, check us out, healthmasters.com. We appreciate the support. You guys have a blessed, safe night and an incredibly awesome weekend, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.